Welcome to Off Message. I'm Isaac Dover.
53% of people trust the media more than Trump to get the story right, which is interesting. Like when you see the numbers, like the distrust in the media, but then versus Trump, it's part of it to me is always like,
I'm not sure trust is what people want from Trump. If that were the case, I think people were really in trouble. I think they want from him his attitude. And I think that they don't mind him being wrong on the facts.
It's that taking him seriously versus taking him literally thing.
You know, if you grew up the way I did with an Irish Catholic family, you understand from your mom that it's not about Joe McCarthy being right on the facts. It's about having the same resentment you have against the establishment.
Today's guest, Chris Matthews, host of Hardball on MSNBC, and the author of more and more insightful books about politics than you'd expect from a TV host. And he actually writes them himself. The latest, which came out last fall, is about RFK, in a deeper look at him as a political player than most anywhere else. It's called Bobby Kennedy, A Raging Spirit. But he's also a former operative, a former candidate himself, a former newspaper columnist, and 25 years on the air now, one of the pioneers of cable news as we've come to know it, as it shaped so much of our whole politics, including, of course, who's in the White House and how decisions are now made there every day. You can see Matthews on TV every night, but here's why I wanted to have him on the podcast this week. It was the White House Correspondents' Dinner this past weekend, as you probably know. And as you probably know also, it's become our latest outrage cycle here in Washington over some of the jokes comedian Michelle Wolf made and some of the responses to them. I wasn't at the dinner this year, but not out of any protest or principle. Just had other people from Politico who hadn't been get to go this year, and so I took the night off. But I went last year and for 5 years before that. Is it a ridiculous event? Yes, definitely. It's silly. It's a lot of people, reporters, politicians, staffers, others, who work really hard, most of them for long hours and less money than they'd be making doing a lot of other things, having a night when they get all dressed up and have a party and interact with each other outside of their usual, naturally antagonistic jobs. Let's be honest, the event is structured around a comedian telling political jokes and, before Trump made a political point of protesting it, presidents for decades were responding with their own speeches full of political jokes. This was not a serious event, and wasn't meant to be, despite the money that it raises for scholarships and what's now been said about it being all about celebrating the First Amendment. But we're in a moment where so much about our assumptions and how things have been done are being challenged. And this is too. And let's be honest about what President Trump is doing about making a fight out of this dinner, and a fight with reporters all the time. It's deliberate, it's tactical, and it's political. He feels he benefits from it, and that it's popular with a lot of the voters who supported him, and that he needs to stick with him. Tapping into both a long tradition of conservatives scoring political points off of attacking journalism, and trying to distract from stories they didn't like. That's now spread beyond conservatives. When I was doing a story a few weeks ago pointing out that Bernie Sanders twice told a very not true story about helping Hillary Clinton's campaign with investigating Russian trolling back in 2016, his spokesperson told me over email that the senator is, quote, not a great fan of reporters who try to provoke controversy where none exists. So now it's become a different game, and here's how the game went down this year. The White House Correspondents Association hired a Democratic-leaning comedian known for going hard at people. Trump kept up what he wanted to be suspense about whether he'd attend this year. And by the way, during that time of suspense, he attended the Gridiron Dinner, another politicians and reporters black tie party, which is pretty much the same. Speeches of jokes making fun of him, and a speech Trump made full of jokes in response. And then Trump announced he wouldn't go to the Correspondents' Dinner. But his concession this year was encouraging staff to go. Meanwhile, he scheduled a campaign rally in Michigan, where among the things that he said was that reporters are very dishonest people, many of them, fake news, very dishonest. And then back at the dinner, aides went to parties all weekend. Former White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer blasted the dinner on Twitter after sitting there all the way through it, but he was all over town taking pictures with people at other parties. And at one party, I heard former White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus say how much he loves the dinner and how he only ever missed it last year when Trump insisted on a full boycott. Other current aides like Sarah Huckabee Sanders and Kellyanne Conway went, knowing that they'd be made fun of and the kind of jokes anyone who would have seen Michelle Wolf's act could have expected. Then there was the outrage and the overflex of grievances, which including people getting caught up in how Wolf's joke about Sanders' eye makeup was mocking her looks. Then the anxiety among reporters for maybe going too far. then a distancing apology from the president of the Correspondents Association, and then, to cap it off, a couple of Trump tweets claiming victory and that the Correspondents' Dinner is dead. So it's in the context of all of that that I went down to the MSNBC studios a few blocks from the Capitol to sit down with Matthews to get his sense of what we're in the middle of here in terms of politics and news and whether we make too much of what's going on or too little of it, or why you see poll after poll showing such distrust in the media. One out from Quinnipiac University last week had 22% of people saying the news media was the enemy of the people. Also, remember that interview back in March 2016 when Matthews asked Trump about abortion and Trump said he thought women should be punished for having abortions, and then he backtracked in a statement a few hours later? It's one of those few times when we've actually seen Trump pressed at length to explain his position on an issue in detail. I wanted to get a sense of what that was like from Matthews' chair and what that relationship has been like since. It's kind of a nutty, freewheeling conversation. He is, as he reminded me right before we started, used to being the one hosting and directing the questions. But I think you'll enjoy it. Remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or whatever your favorite podcast platform is. Coming up next week, late night host Seth Meyers talking about political comedy in the age of Trump and what it's meant for his show. We'll be recording right at 30 Rockefeller Center. And still to come, billionaire impeachment activist Tom Steyer and many more. So hit that button and subscribe and tell a friend or coworker, family member. And remember to rate us too. Follow me on Twitter and on Facebook at Isaac DeVere and email me your thoughts, guest suggestions, and responses at isaac@politico.com. And now, my conversation with Chris Matthews. So why don't we start with this? How bad is the relationship between politicians and journalism right now?
Political. Well, I don't know. I think everything's polarized. I spoke last night, which I often do, about my book, Bobby Kennedy. And people say, how are we going to get back to it? I said, there's so many gaps between where we were. I mean,
but what's you the guys, there?
You're,
how are we
you're,
get
you're,
back
you're
to
in
that?
Your 30s. How old are you?
I'm 37.
Okay. So you don't know the era that occurred before you, which is totally different. When I was growing up, the Republican Party was basically a pro-civil rights party of Northeastern and Midwestern moderate Republicans. And every state in that region, East and Midwest, had at least one or two Republican senators, mm-hmm. and they were all moderates. There were a few conservatives from out west. There were no Southerners. It was a pro-civil rights party. And in fact, if you read Todd Purdom's book about the civil rights bill, it's the heroes are those guys, the Midwestern guys. That's all gone.
Yeah,
they're no more. I mean, except for Susan Collins, that's about it. The New England tradition was sort of marked with the death of Barbara Bush, mm-hmm. that old Yankee Republicanism, moderate, pro-civil rights, probably pro-choice. You know, I remember I was telling the joke because I interviewed her one time upstairs at the White House, and I said, actually, I thought I remembered saying something. You look pro-choice because she seems old Yankee and all. And she goes, and I said, most people think you're pro-choice. She said, well, her answer was absolutely brutal. It was shrewd. She says, most people aren't always right. It was a great answer because you couldn't quote her saying she admitted to being pro-choice, right. but yet it told everybody she's right. pro-choice. It was right. well done and tough. But that party's gone. And in the same way, the old segregationist Democratic Party, which was hampered by its segregationist roots, basically, for all those years with the Solid South, even under Roosevelt, that was a coalition party of Northern liberals, Jewish people, Catholics, labor. But the segregationists were the foundation of the party, where all the votes were. The committee. When I first came to Washington in 1971 out of the Peace Corps, and I'm knocking on doors, the Longworth Cafeteria over in the House site was...
You're knocking on doors to get a job, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just wanted to be clear.
I'm selling me. Yeah. it was all Southern food. It was grits and everything. And it was a Southern empire of all the committee chairs. And they're all Southern. And they ran the place. Yeah. And that's not ancient history. That party is gone. All those Southern white guys, if you will, are all out of business. Bill Nelson's like the last of the breed. And I'm not sure he's not a Southern Florida, Northern Florida guy. But he may be a white shoes kind of old at Northern Florida too a little bit, you know. Right now, somebody said the most liberal Republican and the most conservative Democrat are still apart.
Yeah.
So they used to overlap like 40 or 50%. And for the press, well, you know, in the old days, look, the days of the – I'll throw a kudo out here. the days of the independent reporter is fairly new. The truly independent reporter, Bob Woodward.
Yeah.
How many Bob Woodwards were there around 50 years ago? I mean, there were Tip O'Neill, who I worked for 50 years, and they handled press relations for him as well as a lot of other things. You know, he'd talk to the Globe. The Globe was, I didn't have to talk to the Globe. I never went near them because all those guys, Healy and all the rest of them, Nolan and Barnicle, they were all talking to him all the time. They were all friendly.
Right.
But if I tried to bring somebody from the Herald in there, one of these guys, when Tip was leaving and everybody was doing nice things about him, mostly doing nice things about him, this guy I'd known forever came up to me and said, how do I get it? Can I have an interview with the speaker? I said, there's only one question. What did I say? What disguise you're wearing? Because he wouldn't talk to him. You would feed the Globe and starve the Herald. Right. That's the old way. And, of course, we had the Washington Post and Washington Star, right, where the Washington Post would always, it was under Nixon, they'd play down any good economic news, and the Star would build up any. You'd get the Inflation Day news, the CPI would come out the same day as the unemployment number. The Star would blossom with excitement about the good news of whichever one was good, and the Post dumped on anything Nixon was doing.
So are we
The Post has changed now. The Post is much more of a, it's not as exciting as paper as it was, but it's definitely not ideological anymore.
So are we idealizing?
The New York Times is ideological. The New York Times is still the liberal paper.
Yeah.
The Journal's always been pretty straight in the front pages. But I think today, newspapers are more straight. Broadcast is more polarized, obviously, or cable is. But people go to their own sources and their own media. And I think that's, politicians do too. I mean, I'm sort of center left, I think most people would say. I don't know. People think, somebody on the right think I'm left. Oh, give me a break. I mean, there's about two issues I'm on the left on. I think wars are stupid, these wars, and sort of my Vietnam background. And then I really think, in fairness, because I am pro-civil rights, I really think voting rights is a huge issue. Mm-hmm. And I think anytime the Republicans play these games, they're really bad.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be doing it. And they admit they do it.
But so,
well, those are my issues. I don't jump around on immigration. I'm pretty moderate and on things like fiscal stuff. So, but increasingly, we all know the stories. I mean, look what goes on. There is a real polarization in media, and I think these politicians go to where they feel at home. I think that it's almost like pick your journalist. Don't you think?
You can, right? Like,
well,
in a lot
cool.
of ways,
you're not
right?
going to turn him down. A big name right. senator wants to come on.
Sure,
you'll invite him on. I mean,
do you think Trump has any kind of a point that there's a war between him and journalists?
Well, not between him and Fox and Friends. I think he's very at home there.
He does seem
I think. And look, I'm not a media critic. You guys could be media critics. I'm not. I can get along with all these guys. I've known them all. I've known Laura Ingraham forever. I'm very good friends with Peggy Noonan. I mean, I love her column. I love it. And the only thing we disagree on is some of the partisan stuff, but she and I are like brother and sister reading her columns. So I basically like the other side. And I always tell people, you got to make your own soup. You got to look at a little of this, a little NPR, a little of that. Look it up. Put the truth together yourself. You can't expect Uncle Walter to come along and say that's the way it is.
What's the difference between what you do, what MSNBC does, and what Fox?
Well, first of all, you
Fox.
Just generalized me right there.
Well, that's fair
I
enough.
Think I say people who watch
you,
us all.
You
people
versus
say
Laura
I watch
Ingraham.
You guys all night. I say. Yeah, but don't you notice we're all a little different? Don't you notice we're a little different?
You're more than a little different, right?
Yeah, well, I think some people are more similar, but
because there's this idea, right? Like, okay, so like MSNBC, you go to the left, and Fox, you go to the right.
Well,
and,
Nicole,
but it's not,
I wouldn't
right?
say Nicole.
Yeah.
Nicole is very moderate. I'm not sure. Well, she's tough on Trump, but who isn't? And I think she's all. I think Chuck is very down the middle, mm-hmm. very, very Broder-esque. I think Ari's very legal-minded, mm-hmm. very, very long-headed. Mm-hmm. Smart guy. I like him too. Obviously, most people like him. He's a very likable guy. Young. He comes off as very young in his mm-hmm. thinking. I think Chris Hayes is very good, very solid, mm-hmm. wonderful guy, actually. Lawrence is very, intellectual. And Brian is in great shape at 11. My God, if you like to work late at night, he's in heaven right now, I think. I think the. But Nicole is fascinating watching. I think, and I watch Fox. I mean, Brett's great, and Shep is great, and the others are ideological. That's what it is. When I grew up, I used to deliver the Bulletin. Mm-hmm. The Bulletin. You didn't say the Bulletin. It was the Bulletin. I had 114 papers. I had broken a limit. Once I had over 100. I have two brothers working for me. And I would come home from high school, And I'd go in the firehouse, I'd pick up a huge load of these papers, especially on Wednesdays, because they were the big shopping day, or Tuesday for Wednesday shopping in Philly, which was huge. That's why all the politicians would come at noontime in Philly mm-hmm. and get a half million people, because they're all downtown shopping. They're there already. Nixon come through, but Kennedy, you get the paper, or you get in the car. My dad would get his copy and a train coming home. And they used to say in the New Yorker, in Philadelphia, everybody reads the bulletin. Well, they did. And so you'd have pictures of people in the whole train, men, mm-hmm. coming home, coat and tie,
everybody
reading the bulletin.
Up, right?
So basically, you're getting the bulletin. It was a morning paper delivered in the afternoon. And so when I'd be dropping off at people's houses, they'd be picking it up, and they would go before dinner probably and sit down and read the columnists. That's what we are.
Mm-hmm.
We are the same as that on Fox and on MSNBC. We are the columnists that you read when you got home.
Are you the same as Laura Ingraham then? Like in that same world?
Is that a trick question?
No, I'm like...
That's a trick question. Chris Matthews said the same. I'm saying that are all the columnists the same? I'll throw it back at you. No, they're not all the same. Some columnists are news columnists, reporting columnists. Some are thinker columnists, mm-hmm. Big thought columnists. People like David Brooks are people that, you know,
right.
they see somebody in their blue dress and they write a column about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, every columnist is different. And I think opinion people are all different, but they're all opinion. And some are more reporting opinion because people in the end need substance. And they stop watching shows after a while when they're not getting anything out of them. And I really believe that's true. If they're not getting news out of the show, if people aren't saying, where'd you hear that? I heard that on Hardball last
yeah.
night. If it isn't something you picked up on a show, nobody's going to watch it. It really comes down to teaching. And maybe that's pompous, but if you're not giving people information, you're failing.
Do you think that the Fox News columnists, anchors do that?
Do what? You want me to? I'm not a media critic. I know where you're going. I'm not going to do it. We all do our best.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's a First Amendment situation. You're out there trying to talk to an audience every night for an hour, and you're trying to mix the excitement of the news with the substance of the news,
yeah.
and you're always putting it together. You know, it's hard. I mean, this is my 25th year on the air.
Yeah.
I'm like everybody else. I don't watch anybody but me. I do like Morning Joe. I think Morning Joe has figured it out. I can watch, and I like Nicole. There's
yeah.
some of them I like during the day because they're the ones I have the opportunity to watch. But other guys who are in our business watch me.
Yeah. Let me ask you about Donald Trump. I was watching again this morning the video of your interview with him in
yeah.
March of 16, which yeah. is famous for the debate over abortion.
It wasn't a debate. It was a simple inquiry. I had an answer.
What crime is it?
Well, it's human life.
No. Should the woman be punished for having an abortion?
Look.
This is not something you can dodge.
If abortion is a crime
or abortion is murder, you have to deal with it under the law. Should abortion be punished?
Well, people in certain parts of the Republican Party and conservative Republicans would say, yes, they should be punished.
How about you?
I would say that it's a very serious problem, and it's a problem that we have to decide on. It's very hard.
But you're forbidding
it. Are you going to say put them in jail? Is that what you're talking about?
Because you say you want to ban it. What's that mean?
I am pro-life, yes.
What is ban? How do you ban abortion? How do you actually do it?
Well, you know, you'll go back to a position like they had where people will perhaps go to illegal places.
Yeah.
But you have to ban it.
They go to somebody who flunked out of medical school.
Are you Catholic?
Yes, I think I
how do you feel about the Catholic Church's position?
I accept the teaching authority of my church on moral issues.
But do you know their position on abortion?
Yes, I do.
And do you concur with that position?
I concur with their moral position, but legally, I get to the question. Here's my problem with it.
No, but let me ask you, but what do you say about...
It's not funny.
...your church? Yeah, it's really not a funny thing. What do you say about your church? They're very, very strong.
They're allowed to, but the churches make their moral judgments, but you running for president of the United States will be chief executive of the United States. Do you believe in punishment for abortion? Yes or no, as a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
10 cents, 10 years,
I don't know.
Why not? I don't know. You take positions on everything else.
Some form of punishment.
Yeah.
He didn't say fine or imprisonment either, by the way. He said some form
yes.
of punishment.
What would be the form
right. of punishment? It's also the use of the word punishment was interesting.
And that then you said that men, would men be subject to anything? And he said no. And,
he was quick on that one. He had that answer. He had that answer ready, didn't he? No, he went after me on my religion then, and I said I accept the teaching authority of my church on moral issues, which is is the truth.
What's that like when he? Because what I well,
he thought
to me
he
about
got. He,
is like,
he does know ethnic stuff. He does know religion. He's a New Yorker, after all.
Yeah, of course.
He knows what we all are, and he probably looks at us. He knew I was a Catholic. I talk about it all the time. You know.
I don't think it's a great secret.
I don't know, Holy Cross, LaSalle High School, maternity, BVM. I went the whole, I am Catholic, I go to church. I just thought, it's the old challenge. I mean, it's something that we who are pro-choice Catholics have to deal with. And it's that, I'm not satisfied with my answer, but it is my answer. I don't want to live in a country that's that compulsive. I mean, that repressive, that it can stop a woman from taking a pill or stop a woman from having a medical procedure that you may not agree with morally, but you, to live in such a totally almost really totalitarian world where you couldn't do it, I don't want to be there. You know, and I know they can say, "Oh, we'll take the doctor's license away from him," but that's just another way of driving it underground, and it's not going to. But I'm not satisfied with my answer. I wish you could. I wish there was a better sort of way of dealing with it. But I've been this way since 1974, when I ran in the Democratic primary, I've been pro-choice.
Yeah.
And I do know this about voters, that I've heard this said about voters, and this is in my world of political analysis. Voters respect consistency. Once you take a position, you don't really have to move on.
But what was interesting to me about the Trump thing at the time and then rewatching it now is that it's this rare time where he says something, he says, look, I'm pro-life, you know I'm pro-life. Are in a position to say to him, well, what does that mean? Explain what you'd, and then
well, I've had this argument.
That,
right? I had an argument with a bishop from Providence, and the Providence, he was coming down really hard on Patrick Kennedy, who I sympathize with. Yeah. He had his problems, and he was jumping on him for being vote choice. And I go, okay, Your Excellency, you're moving into legislation.
Yeah.
We're not talking religion anymore. You're talking about what a legislator should do.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about that. That's when he became totally frozen. He wouldn't talk. I said, so what should the law be?
Yeah.
See, that's why I insist that these terms apply to the law.
When
you say it to a clergy, a Catholic, you say, what should the law be? We should respect. No. What should the law be? What should be the sanction? And then you go, well, if a woman chooses to have an abortion and goes to a doctor and goes to a clinic or Planned Parenthood or her doctor and you would penalize the doctor but not her. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
And I go, that's the conundrum.
Yeah.
These doctors don't go door to door trying to seek this procedure. That people come to them and then they say, well, it's a man's problem, or they try to shift it over. Somebody forced her to do it. Well, that's not true. Middle-aged women who've said they've had enough children have decided not to have another one. That's their call. It's not my call, but it's their call. And if you're going to say that they're not mature, you're not really being honest about it. And you're also, if a young woman gets pregnant and doesn't want to bear a child, that's her call really too. It's also, she may be in a relationship or not be in one.
Yeah.
But we understand. It's pretty much, the funny thing is, the irony thing, it's not funny, is we all are on the same page with this. We all know what we're talking about. But some people are being more honest than others.
But in terms of the Trump dynamic there, here's what struck me about it.
He had never confronted this question.
Yeah, so
I think it's quite simple. It fits into many examples of where Mr. Trump, who is very skilled probably in the real estate codes in New York and knows how to deal with councilmanic privilege and having to deal with the mob or anybody else up there, he knows it all. There are vast areas. He didn't learn it at Wharton, okay? They didn't have courses in moral teachings of the Catholic Church at Wharton. I mean, he took the strict business courses.
Right.
You know that? You imagine what he said when they say, "Want to take history this year? Why would I take that?"
Right, exactly.
What's that? How does that make me a buck?
But so he
didn't take the humanities.
You tried to pin him down, and he doesn't.
It wasn't like a big strategy.
No. You were having, I don't think that it was like, let me box him in on this. It just looked like, okay, what do you mean by that? And he couldn't tell you what he meant by it. And then you see what he does in a lot of situations. So he turned it around on you, like you said, like in asking you about your Catholic.
Well.
You did. But as you're saying to him, like, well, we're not talking about me. We're not talking about me. He still he was able to push the conversation to that. And then like 3 hours after the interview, when he was getting a lot of trouble, he put out a statement that completely reversed. And what that made me think of is like one of the issues in covering the Trump.
Oh, by the way, let me tell you, that's politics.
And that's politics,
okay,
but it's
he did it again the other day. He did this yesterday again, And I was comparing it to Reagan. Reagan got caught telling a Pope joke.
Uh-huh.
If you don't play the game, you shouldn't make the rules. You know, since the Pope's done. So he's doing an Italian accent, which I think that was the Reagan joke. So when Reagan gets caught on it, which is who cares? It's a big ethnic joke. Right? He gets caught and he has to apologize. I think so. Reagan said, "I wasn't telling a joke. I was just giving an example of the jokes making the rounds."
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what everybody does. Everybody tells a joke. They didn't make them up. They're made up in prison somewhere. And the idea but it was just perfect sin. Yeah, I did tell. I was giving that as an example of the jokes making the rounds.
Right.
Well, he did tell the joke, in other words.
But it's like with Trump, part of the challenge of reporting about the White House, this White House, is that you don't have reliable sources on what he is thinking or doing, because either they may not be informed or they may be misleading, as lots of political operatives do, or more likely, it's just hard to know where the president's mind is at any moment.
And well, we knew yesterday morning.
You mean with the Fox and Friends?
Oh, yeah. That was a stream of consciousness. That was a Howard Beale.
Yeah.
But it wasn't for anybody but himself. I mean, his mind does connect everything. And it is fascinating to hear the sort of MRI, a Trump MRI, just because everything. And another thing is bothering me.
But meanwhile,
it really shows he's got a very sharp mind in that way, that he's always right next to the thing that's bugging him.
Yeah.
It's ready to be verbalized. And he's very good on his feet, in a way. And I watch him. I did this comment the other night. I said, he's always shooting the moon and hearts. He's always doing the opposite of what everybody else does. Everybody else is trying to discard their hearts, and he's going for the hearts. He bets against the market brilliantly, and he figures out who out there is not going to take on immigrants. Who's not going to go out there and say this stuff? Right. Who's not going to say, I will, because nobody else is doing it. I'll be one to take on the Republican establishment.
Mm-hmm.
The other stuff is just indefensible, making nicknames out of people. And that's high school. That's what you're told by your parents to grow out of, you know. You know, going after, you know. Some of them are brilliant. Some of them are brilliant. I mean, low energy Jeb was brilliant. Jeb held his head sideways with that sort of canine thing he did when he didn't understand something. If Elizabeth Warren is a nominee, well, we hear Pocahontas 1 million times. We'll see if it gets worn out.
I said
it was
to somebody
funny
who,
the first time. Yeah. It wasn't so funny the second and 10,000th time. It's Chris Rock once talked about how Italian guys in New York make fun of people. What they do is they don't put them down. They name the most famous person in their ethnic group and call them that. Like, so Queen Latifah comes in here, you know, and it's like that kind of weird kind of New York ethnic humor that Trump knows. You know, he didn't call her a bad Indian. He didn't call her Geronimo. He called her, you know, a really popular American
Indian.
People
don't have a problem with Pocahontas, the historical figure.
Yeah, no,
right?
But it makes it makes his kind of weird kind of joke work. At least for a while, because I shouldn't be saying it's good, because it's not good, but it wasn't, you couldn't clearly say it wasn't knocking her.
Right.
It wasn't knocking Indians. It was knocking her for claiming to be an Indian.
And then there's this, like, well, is it racist?
No, it was claiming to be an Indian. He wasn't knocking Indians or North American Native Americans. He was knocking her for claiming to be one.
Right.
Which is.
And that's that tricky thing that he does very well.
He's going to keep doing it.
But he's not a reliable source on himself. That's my point, right? And so when he says, like, fake news or this reporting's wrong, it's because, like, what he thinks
he
at 5 o'clock.
Truth. He doesn't tell the truth on a lot of things.
Do you think he's a liar?
Well, I don't like the word, but it's a lie to say that Obama was born in Kenya. And by the way, it is an absurd lie. A white woman from Kansas marries an unreliable, hard-drinking Kenyan. And then decides, even though they're living in America, that they're going to go over to Kenya to have the baby so that she can have the baby declared born in Honolulu, so that in 35 years, somebody she names Barack Hussein Obama is going to be president of the United States. Come on. It makes no sense.
You got to have well-cooked plans.
No, the conspiracy theory, it's insane. It works to the racists.
Right.
And I don't know what he is, but he was playing with the racists with that one. That was aimed directly at people that hate blacks.
So what's the difference?
And it was aimed directly at people that didn't want to have to recognize that Barack Obama's name and face belongs in the history of presidents. They want to put an asterisk next to it. That's what he was doing. And it worked because it got that base of the haters behind him.
What's the difference between when he doesn't tell the truth now and you not saying he's a liar now?
I just don't like the word.
Why not?
I don't like it. I said, I don't use the word.
But is he deliberately not telling the truth?
I said, I don't use the word. Go to somebody else to get the word from him.
Because
it ends the discussion.
I struggle with
it. You call somebody a liar, you're basically ending the relationship of any kind, any kind of conversation. And you kind of keep somebody once said to me, always be able to talk to somebody, always be able to talk. And I want to be able to always be able to talk to him.
Do you talk to him?
Up at the Gridiron, we chatted. We had a nice chat and with Melania. They're very friendly. I mean, I've known him since 20 years ago. I've 20 years I've interviewed him. I'm starting to get along with him. Like, isn't that what we're supposed to do? Talk to each other?
But he's pleasant. He's been pleasant
to
you since
then?
Yeah.
I think we're, like, I don't want to get into it. I get along with people. See, I get along with you. See? It's just my, I get along with people.
As 25 years as a successful TV person.
No, it's just, it's not phony. It's just, I find the good in most people. I find something there.
Do you think that journalists have learned the right lessons from 2016, from the years leading up to 2016 in terms of political coverage?
Well, you know, I wrote that book you're looking at there, Hardball, and I'm working on another one, which is just trying to remember everything I've ever learned starting when I first started to pay attention to life and to politics. And I started thinking, well, what did I learn on that job? Oh, I learned this. What did I learn on that job? What did I learn there? I'm trying to develop that into a really good book over the years. I could take years to get it right, or I get it done next year. But I mean, it's like I'm trying to get it. I really try to learn things, the rules, that there are rules of behavior. And Trump has broken a lot.
Yeah.
You know, he calling people by names. But it's all based on the fact he's the only hope of the people who resent the establishment. He has made himself the tribune of the unhappy. And he's so good at playing to them that 40-some percent. That it'll still come down to the fact that the system that he ran against is still there. It hasn't changed. It's as vulnerable politically as it was in 15 and 16. It still sits there. And that's why I always say to people, if you haven't made this establishment, Republican Party, Democratic Party, more attractive to the working people, to feel discarded, that you have, you're going to have a tough election in 20 if he runs again. Not that it's not a little more favorable to you, but it's what he ran against is still fat and happy. Well, it still sits there, and they think they've got it made.
I was talking to somebody who worked on the Clinton campaign who said to me, for all the people who think it's unbelievable that he could win again, like, it's at least a little more believable than it was in 2016 when nobody thought it was possible, right? Like, he won then. He could obviously
win
again.
It's always going to come down to the country's 50-50 when it comes to the voting booth. As you said, we're talking about deadlines.
Yeah.
The vote's a deadline. And when it comes to a vote, you only got two choices. Yeah. It's really binary. And it's even more than that. It's yeah or not yeah.
Right.
So it's like the old.
Yeah, it's which one do I hate less?
No, it's a zero or one.
Yeah.
It's a zero or one. And if you go to one, you want to keep things going the way they're going.
Yeah.
If you
well,
don't
it's
like,
an incumbent.
If you don't like the way things are going, you vote zero.
Yeah.
That's how simple it is. And so in the end, you run Elizabeth Warren. Who could run really? I could see her winning the early primaries, scooting along there, get to California. I could see Kamala Harris winning California. I could see Bernie winning. I think it's tougher for Biden if he runs because he's a moderate. But then again, he might be able to bunch them, and do the Carter thing where you win as the outside. You know, shape of the field defines the winner. Trump is still great on the stage. I still think his strategy is to stay in the mid 40s, meet the opponent on the stage, beat the hell out of them.
Life's a campaign.
No. I wrote a book on that. And beat the hell
out of
them.
He said that too.
Beat the hell out of them on the stage. You know, Jon Stewart didn't like the title of that book.
He did not.
You remember what he did to me?
I do remember.
What was that? Where are you in that? Was he too cruel to me or not? He was so tough.
He was very tough on you. He seemed like he had been building up for a long time things that he wanted to let loose on you. What was it 2007? That seems like so long ago. It was before the 08 campaign.
It was my fault, though. I did something right before the show. It was my fault.
You did? You pissed him off?
Yeah.
What'd you do?
I was being. He made a comment about I was really tall, and I responded in that kind.
I mean, you're not that tall. He is very short.
Well, apparently that was an issue, and I made it worse.
It's so strange.
And I made it worse.
It's never been heard about in human history that people who are short are sensitive about being
called
short.
I think it was my fault. I should have been more sensitive.
I see there was a Quinnipiac poll about press.
How do you remember that? I get over that. I liked them. We did some fundraising thing at the Beacon Theater about a year later. We were fine. I mean, I remember they did that helium thing with Bill O'Reilly.
Oh, right.
Well, I really did it. O'Reilly wouldn't do it. A typical O'Reilly. I actually, you know, really inhaled that stuff and had that crazy, you know, chipmunk's voice, right. You know. But he wouldn't do the chipmunk's voice. It was below him, but I did it. I get along with Stewart said, I miss him.
Yeah.
I think he's great. I like him.
It's weird to not have his voice in the conversation, whatever you think of him.
I think he's tough, and he was there before Colbert when it came to being a really tough satirist. I mean, he's good. And I don't know why. When I was upcoming, see, I had a tradition of always bringing one of my kids to the New Hampshire Primary. It's like to me, it's a theme park. You know? So I'd take them up for 4 days, and I'd be knocking out my columns when I was a columnist, and they'd be watching TV. Then we went to dinner afterwards and meet all the celebrities. My daughter Caroline, our daughter, she just wanted to be one guy, Stewart. Stewart was a real star. The others didn't mean anything.
So there's this Quinnipiac poll that came out last week, and it had 66% of people say the news media is an important part of democracy, and 22% of people said it's the enemy of the people.
Well, you know what? I think Jefferson was right. We're better off with a free press than the right kind of government. I think, you know, they say that. You know, there's so much.
The Republican breakdown on that was 51 say important and 37.
When people say, how come you don't talk about this? And I said, well, how come you know about it?
Right.
And they were watching us the night before. And how come you don't talk?
I see that all the time. People are like, oh, well, you know, why aren't you writing about this article? Like the thing that you read about, like
we just
on the Politico website, like why aren't we writing more?
Why don't you have different kinds of people on? And I go, like, who? Noam Chomsky. And I go, okay. And it's always the same guy. And I go, how about the, why don't you have different?
It's always Noam Chomsky.
And it was there for years. It was Noam Chomsky. I said, okay, I bet it's Noam Chomsky. Yes, it's Noam Chomsky. I found when I was doing a signing last night, I came across an actual grassy knoll guy. He said it wasn't him. It couldn't have been him. It, Oswald, because they had to aim down the chute because he's going up there. I said, come on, I've seen the ballistics testing and all. And they said it was the grassy knoll. And he actually said the grassy knoll.
So the other thing in the poll is that 53% of people trust the media more than Trump to get the story right. Which is interesting, like when you see the numbers, like the distrust in the media, but then versus Trump, it's part of it to me is always like,
I'm not sure trust is what people want from Trump. If that were the case, I think people were really in trouble. I think they want from him his attitude. And I think that they don't mind him being wrong on the facts.
It's that this taking him not, seriously versus taking him literally
new.
Thing.
You know, if you grew up the way I did with an Irish Catholic family, you understand from your mom that it's not about Joe McCarthy being right on the facts. It's about having the same resentment you have against the establishment. And that's where Bobby learned the difference. He grew up and he said he realized the people that he liked and cared about, like McCarthy, were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not good people because of it. So with Trump, I don't think people are going to Trump for fact. I think they're going for position. And he's against the system. And they root for him.
Yeah.
He's the only guy in the country or person in the country who is doing this. He's the only game in town if you don't like the way things are going in this country. And apparently they're not happy with even the tax cut, and which was brilliantly put together to have something for the middle. I mean, if a guy like Kevin McCarthy were running the show right now, they'd be talking about the tax cut every minute. Instead, they're talking about they're listening to Trump.
One of the things that you were saying before, like people go to they have every news source that they can go to now. That to me
well,
is
actually,
always
the average Joe out there doesn't. You know, like you and I and everybody here, we look at Axios and we look at Playbook and we all do. We go through, we see all this stuff. And then I pick up and I read the newspaper, the Post, and I read the sports, see how the Phillies did, see how the Sixers are doing, read the reliable source and read the front page, read the op-eds if I can find anybody worth reading. And then I do the Times the same, but it's a little harder going. And then I maybe take a look at the Journal. And go to work. But I don't know how much of that I glaze over. I don't know how much that I really absorb.
Right.
You know? And then I come in here and read a pile of stuff I get from all the afternoon news that's moving. And it still comes down to what I'm interested in. I'm interested in the Russian connection. I want to cover that. I think that's our specialty. I want to really know that as well as Mueller knows it. I do believe that he needs to get a Russian collusion fact. Before he gets he's not going to get a bipartisan support for impeachment. If it's not bipartisan, what does it mean? If the Democrats get 230 seats in the House next year and they pass a resolution of impeachment with 223.
You think they will?
Listen, 223 seats. In other words, they squeak it.
Yeah.
What's it mean?
Yeah.
Nothing. It's nothing.
That's why I talked to some Democrats who they think that politically the best case scenario for them is to fall just short of the majority. So they can say like, oh, we did really well, but then they don't have to deal with the impeachment stuff and some of the other things, whatever.
Because somebody hit me in the room last night that Nancy Pelosi is going to turn it over to Joe the Third.
Well, I mean, there's that.
Have you heard that rumor?
Not that she's going to.
I thought it was Crowley, but
I mean, Crowley is more open about wanting it, but there are a lot of Democrats in the House who talk about Kennedy
as a speaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
And well, she was the one, she was very proud to point out that it was her idea completely to make him the one who did the State of the Union response.
Yeah,
she really wanted that known, that Chuck Schumer was the one who came up with Steve Beshear last year. And she was like, but I pick Kennedy.
I'm watching him. And then I see a picture of Bobby I was looking at some newsreels because there's all this Bobby stuff now. And I look at the picture of Bobby in his mid-30s. It's him.
Bright red hair. It's like
looks like him.
It's like somebody took a Bobby Kennedy picture and just like with marker colored bright red hair.
Yeah. Well, he married a wasp. I mean, I think he was raised by the waspy wife.
Let me ask you this. We can close with this one. You know TV. Trump thinks in terms of TV. How do you think the Trump show is doing at this point?
I think it is wearing surprisingly well. I look at the numbers. He's holding mid-40s. I think there's always some handful of non-admitting Trumpies. I believe that makes sense. They don't want to shout it out. I think the establishment on the Republican Party has caved.
Mm-hmm.
And that has helped him. There's no really anti-Trump Republican Party, mm-hmm. except retirees. On the way to the old folks' home, these people all settle like Trump. But no, they don't say it until they leave. In fact, you can tell Ryan, what's the guy's name from? Ryan Costello?
Yeah, Ryan Costello from Pennsylvania.
He started dumping on Trump. And wait a minute, when's he quitting? Oh, 3 days later he quit. So exactly. It's Charlie Dent and him and Corker and I go, and Flake. And I go, yeah, but they're all leaving.
Right.
And they're not facing the voters again. Flake wasn't going to face the voters with that point of view. So I like Charlie Dent, of course, but, you know, I think he knows what's going on. But
And Trump would say, like, oh, you've got a lot of complaints, but, hey, you're out the door. Like, it does seem like I'm going to be here next year and you won't.
Don't let the door hit you on the way out, brother. It's so interesting. And here we are, adults, a country of growing diversity. And here we are thinking about who's going to lead us. And with all our profundity about it, it comes down in the end to this sort of thing in us that says, yeah to one person and not yeah to the other. Yeah or no. We don't pick our presidents. They pick themselves out of ego. And we get to select among a very small group of people who said, I should be president. We don't pick them. We select among them. And in the end, it's a binary choice. And it gets, after Iowa, it three tickets out of Iowa, you know that?
Maybe.
It dissolves so quickly into two or three people. And you go, do I like Hillary or not? Well, I always thought Hillary Clinton was a mixed attitude. Because when I'm with her, I'm very charmed by her. I mean, I find her very likable in person. And in all the nice ways men and women get along, we get along. You get along like that. There's something about it. The chemistry's great. On the stump, it's not the same. With Al Gore, it wasn't the same. There's some people that don't reflect their person. In the room, that person in the room, they don't put it out there. Trump is the same freaking guy in the room anywhere. I mean, he's bumping them in the bathroom. He's the same guy. Bumping them he's the same guy. There's only one Trump. I mean, Jack used to say about Dick Nixon, I'm a master at this discussion. I can talk to you about these guys. They were friends for years. Jack said he doesn't know which Nixon to be on any given occasion. I feel sorry for him because Nixon was always playing out parts. Trump's not playing any parts. This is Trump. And I think that's a great strength. And I think Hillary and all these other people, Bill Clinton has the lip biting Bill, and there's the other Bill, and there's, you know who he is. And guys like Jeb, not ready for prime time. Gore, never clicked on the stage. John Kerry, better guy than he shows. And these are the choices we end up. This is the astounding thing.
Yeah.
This is the final. These are the finalists.
These are the best we've got.
Now, this is, you know, John Kerry, Mitt Romney, Walter Mondale, Bob Dole. This is like the finalists.
Right.
And we have to choose between them and somebody like them. And all of a sudden, comes along a guy, usually a guy, and we go, okay, I like him more.
Yeah.
I had a theory in one of my books, since you've read them all, you probably came across. The man with the sun on his face always beats the guy behind the desk. And you would, and there's only exception to that. As always, they said it was Nixon in 68 because of Watergate and all that hell. But if you go through Roosevelt, you think of him outside in a roadster with the hat pulled back, the cigarette holder. You can see him.
It's your version
then
of the
you
guy
see
you
Harry
wanted to
Truman.
Be with.
You see Harry Truman out there. He's out there giving him hell with that double-breasted suit. Yeah, the middle-class guy out there. Yeah. But you always think of Dewey in the freaking behind the desk with a suit on, a tie buttoned down. You think of Nixon that way. You think of Dole that way. You think of Dukakis definitely that way. All indoor people, all indoor desk jockeys. And the cowboyish guy, the out guy with the big smile, Eisenhower, beats the shit out of Adlai. Although Adlai was great. His voice, you know, they're ever, it's like a Ronald Coleman voice. But it didn't matter because look at this guy, Ike. His face is, the smile is wide as whatever, Kansas. Okay, try this again, 2020. Who are the Democrats going to put up who has a face with the sun in his face, who comes across as Mr. America, the guy or woman who just smiles and is American, is so healthy and happy to be an American and wants to knock this guy off his throne? Who's that person?
Who's that person?
That's a hell of a question, isn't it? A hell of a question.
Do you
because
have any
if it's somebody with a dark suit on, it looks like they belong behind a desk somewhere. Somebody's very good on full funding for Title 20 programs. You know, it was one of those people, you know? Very hard to figure out. I can think of a lot of running mates. I mean, great running mates. Kamala, bullseye. In every way, she's a woman of color. She's, you know, I don't know what you're allowed to say these days, but she's going to come across as elegant and smart and a former attorney general. She could be law and order, the whole thing. She's going to be great. Biggest state. Probably win the primary out there. First, and it's going to be in March, I guess. She's great. I thought Sherrod Brown would have been a great running mate for Hillary. Mm-hmm. A fantastic one. And I think so many of these, you know, Amy Klobuchar, Claire McCaskill gets through this race. They're great. And I look at, I don't know Corey very well, Booker. I'm waiting on him. I think Mitch Landry is fabulous. And I think Garcetti is like a movie star. He's part Jewish, part Latino, part Italian.
Yeah, well, it's like Italian heritage that routed through Mexico.
I think he's part Jewish, too.
That's his father's side, and the mother is Jewish.
Yeah, I mean, he's like,
mother's side
he's got the perfect.
He's got sun on his face. He's in
L.A. Yeah, I think if he can come out and do it, you know, I think somebody's got to come out there and be just something about the American continent and how they fit with it. Something about that. I don't want to get too deep in it, so I'm not sure it's true. But I've noticed that the American people have a tremendous attraction to the positive and the hope. Obama was the best smile in America. There's never been a better smile than Barack Obama. That smile still kills me.
Yeah.
You know, when
it's
he does
hard.
It. And
it's
he
hard,
can do it when he wants to.
Yeah.
He does it when he wants
to. And he knows exactly what he's doing when he unleashes that thing.
He's really a very likable guy. Have you met him?
I have.
He's a very likable guy. And he's got a funny wit. I got stories to tell about him I can't tell either. Great stories. He is so cool, it scares you. He's cooler than Sinatra. He's just totally cool. He will say something and go, oh, my God, is that cool?
Yeah. He has a way about him. That's.
But I got my thrill up my leg from him.
Right,
I haven't had many thrills up my leg in my life, and I got one from him. So and it actually happened, and I can't deny it. But I thought he was great. I thought it was inspiring.
So let's just close the thought there. You said you see a lot of good running mates out there. Is there any? There's no number one that you see right now.
Somebody's got to come up and show they've got the heft.
Yeah.
To be number one, president of the United States. And I don't think Trump has lowered the heft requirement. I think with all his flaws, there's heft there. I mean, he's a leader. He's a leader. The Republican Party's doing what he said they wanted. He tells them we're protectionist. All of a sudden, guys, their whole lives, you know, Churchill quit the Tory party over the trade issue. You know, if it's that important.
Yeah.
And these guys, okay.
Right.
You know.
No, it's
well, ask Portman. How does Portman shift on this? How does Portman say, I'm going to be, oh, yeah, I'm a free trader, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And all these guys from, you know, Mitch McConnell, all those guys, they're all in line. How does Toomey, who's a, you know, a Club for Growth guy, how can he support this stuff?
Yeah.
So, obviously, he's a leader. And they don't challenge them on immigration or the Islamic thing. I always spoke to the Islamic group coming up. These are sensitive national identity questions, and they're going along with them. You know, I think he's got the heft,
yeah.
And they're going to beat him. And I've said, you'll notice when you talk to Democrats, partisans, they'll all say this. They'll talk about impeachment, but they all know they got to beat him when it comes to it.
Mm-hmm.
They all know it's going to come down to 2020 again. Who's going to win the ring with him? And when he glowers over them and looms over them, what's he going to do? What's he or she going to do?
And they're all more scared of that than they like
now,
to admit.
You can't fight the last war. So politics is not set shots.
Sometimes it is.
You think it is? No, it's spontaneity.
Yeah.
Got to be on a stage with a guy. It's what makes it exciting. Politics isn't predictable. Some of it is. The great thing about studying politics all my life is there are parts of it you can actually prepare for. Don't do wrong disclosure. Break the story yourself. You'll control it then. But some things are unpredictable, and that's what drives the unspontaneous people insane, because they're not spontaneous, and they want to have it figured out for them, and they want somebody to tell them what to do. But I'll say this about W, who I didn't like over the war, but I'll tell you, W did one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen done in politics when he put his arm around the firefighter.
Mm-hmm. On September 11th, right afterwards, right?
Friday. Yeah. And when he said, it's chilling. And he said, but the people that he even spoke in almost childish English. He said, the people who knocked down these buildings will hear from us soon. It was so American.
You just go right
that
to
was
it.
The guy with a sun in his face, right there, you know? And Gore couldn't have done it.
Well, we covered
but
a lot.
He went back to the Vasky afterwards. I mean, who's he with on the way out the door? I mean, on the other side of that. You're right. Audrey Hiss was innocent. Okay, you know your stuff, Isaac. I must say, I'm very impressed.
Well,
I'm not being condescending.
You know your stuff.
Yeah, I'm supposed to.
I'm supposed to know my stuff. Well, that went all over the place, but it was fun. He's definitely got a lot of thoughts about a lot of things. Thanks to Zach Stanton, as always, for producing. Remember to subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode. Seth Meyers is up next, then we'll have Tom Steyer, and a spring that's going to keep coming with great new guests all over the midterms. Someone you'd like to hear on here? Email me at isaac@politico.com. And catch you next time on Off Message.